the weekend, weekend.
You know, Roland, we've been going through the yet another Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And I read an article some years ago by a man by the name of Dean Hobart. Hobart? A War Without End and or an End to War. And his only point was, is that there are certain wars that will continue on long past our lifetimes, because the Balfour Declaration back at the turn of the last century by the British,
the Lord Balfour.
Yes, yeah. I'm sorry.
He was the leader of that of Palestine,
yes,
at the time.
After World War One into World War Two, and during that period between the wars, the Balfour Declaration was supposed to have been able to settle this issue of land and who belongs where in a particular part of the of the Middle East. Well, it didn't work, unfortunately, and I'm wondering. Is there a place on the planet, in this particular instance, the Middle East, where this will be a war without end or an end to war? Well, and if this place were to settle the question of our ability to be able never to fight again, to discuss, to come to compromise from two radically different religious perspectives and other cultural perspectives, if we're able to solve this question there, can we solve the end to war throughout this planet? That was the question that was posed. I don't have an answer. I thought I would just, shall we say, drop it on the table.
Well, you're not going to look to me for an answer. I mean, I'm trying to go back into the memory of what I remember.
And you have you have a good memory.
You had the Balfour Declaration, which divided Palestine into three segments.
Correct.
It was the Jewish segment, mm-hmm. the Palestinians.
And the creation of the quasi-Jordan border.
Correct.
And the West Bank and all of that.
Well, as I understand it, the British tried to entice the Arabs at that time to fight against the old Ottoman Empire, which
Correct.
Was basically in Turkey. And the British then promised that they would then seek an acceptance of a Palestinian state.
Correct.
And it did not happen.
It did
in
not
fact,
happen.
The Arabs have felt since then, and many times since then, betrayed.
Correct.
So,
the British use to an end to get them to fight against the Ottoman Turks, who were with the Germans in World War One,
yeah.
and they wanted to be able to move them into a neutral position so the British could have an open playing field as far as the Ottoman Turks were concerned.
Yeah, I mean, that's the T.E. Lawrence.
Yes.
What was that called? Lawrence of Arabia.
Lawrence of Arabia, yeah, right. Which happens to be very true historically.
Yeah.
Almost spot on. But the point is, and it's an open question, is it a war without end or is it an end to war? Will we ever look at this and say, if we can solve this question, can we solve this question as a platform, as a guideline, as a template for the rest of the world?
Well, you know, many years ago, I had the chance to interview the then Prime Minister of Israel, Golda Meir.
Wonderful interview,
and,
by the way.
I remember asking her at one point, and I may have told this story before.
It's worth repeating.
I'll tell it again.
It's worth repeating.
The question was, I asked her, I said, will we ever have peace, what you're just talking about,
Correct.
In the Middle East? And this was her answer. She said, and I'm quoting, when Arab mothers tell their children not to hate, when Israeli mothers tell their children not to hate, we will have the beginnings of peace.
And let us leave that thought right there. We should, because you and I can spin it beautifully said. It makes sense. Because we there is no place else to go, because just like the war, which seems to be an endless conflagration that never ends.
Yeah, but, you know, you talked about, is it the end of war, or what was the other part?
A war without end or an end to war.
Right, okay. And then you said initially that these are something that's been in our lives and we've talked about and heard about for most of our lives.
Most of our lives.
Okay. Don't you think that the Civil War is still going on in the United States?
In some respects, yes.
I mean, so that there is another, but it's not the conflict that and the killing, obviously, that and the carnage that happens. Seems like every 2 years in the Middle East,
but
the Civil War aspect of the South versus the North is still, I think, very prevalent, especially when you travel from the North and talk to the people who live in the South.
But I'm wondering if that is clearly a topic for another discussion. And it really is. No, the Civil War, in my opinion, has not ended. It has ended, of course, on the battlefield, but that sense of it, it's better now than it was over the last 50 years. And I've lived that long, and I've been in the South, so I know it has. I can tell a very interesting story. If you have time to tell this story, when I was traveling on a train, I got off a train with a friend of mine. We went into this town in South Carolina. I'm going to say Shawnee, but I'm not sure. And we went to the middle of the town because the train stopped right in the middle of the town. And I was thirsty, and I didn't know it. I went running up to a water fountain that was empty. I didn't notice the sign above it. And there was a long line on the other side. And I went to that water fountain and had a drink. And the porter came running off the train, grabbed me and my friend, and said, and dragged us. They said, just come with me by the naps of our neck. I was 12 years old. By the naps, and put us back on this train. Was just heading to Miami, by the way, from New York to Miami. Seacoast Express was its name. And he said, you can't drink out of that fountain. I said, why? He said, because that's for blacks only. I didn't understand that. I said, I don't understand that. I mean, it's a fountain. It's empty. I want to drink out of it. And I did. I didn't understand and he was a black porter who understood the situation. He realized I really did not understand what that meant. One sign said white, the other, I never looked up, white and black. Mm-hmm. So I actually lived this experience.
Well, you weren't used to doing that, living in a major metropolitan area.
I didn't understand it, though. It's water. There's a water fountain there, and there's a water fountain here. And there's no one on this line. I'm a city kid. I'm a street kid. That line's empty. I'm going to race to that line, take a drink out of water. I didn't understand it. And I look at, and to use that analogy, I don't think the layperson in these conflicts really understand exactly what is going on. Because when you look at the Palestinian-Israeli question, if you go there, I know people who have, someone who just came back, the people themselves, all they want to do is do business together. They want to be able to work together, and they want peace. Someone doesn't, you see.
Well, history sometimes dictates how one feels about certain things.
Sure.
I mean, you have the Turks and the Croatians or Macedonians, rather? And you have, is that correct? Or correct me on that.
I'm not sure where we're going with this. The Turks?
Well, I was talking about old conflicts and how history sustains them for modern people who don't have any issue with the old conflict, but still feel like, well, gee, maybe I ought to not like that person because.
And we live in a world today, we talked about this in earlier segments, we're living in an electronic age, an age of communication where selfies and all sorts of things are bringing the world closer together. And I believe that's the one great plus of this instrument we call a cell phone, okay? Where I could pick up a phone and talk to someone in South Africa or in India. I really can. And that's exciting. And that means there's communication going on. And is that what it's about? I don't know. But I look at this conflict and the Israelis and the Palestinians that goes on and on and on. And it doesn't seem to be any end to it. But is it the formula for an end to war? Because if we can solve that question, can we solve other questions?
Well, I'm not sure that's solvable in our lifetime.
I don't think it is. But we can sure as heck try. And that's the point I guess I'm trying to raise. My adventure in South Carolina back in 1961, which is when that took place. 1961. I didn't understand. Because I was thirsty, and I wanted some water, okay? And there was a water fountain, and there was no line there, so I raced towards it. That, to me, back in 1961, which is now 50-some-odd years ago, says to me, do you think America has come a long way? Hopefully it has.
Oh, I think America has come a long way, but I don't think we're all the way yet.
No.
We have a long thing to do. In fact, at some point, I mean, I wrote a poem once on Martin Luther King.
Let us do that.
And I will do that because it basically talks about what we've just been dealing with, which is, you know, conflict, and some of it's racial and some of it's religious.
And the line that is drawn, sometimes the line that is drawn, who is it once said it? I forget who it was, a historian, who said the line that is drawn between conflicts is more narrow than we believe it to be. Maybe it's not such a big problem. We've only created that problem.
And if we're not willing to look into its history and its genesis, then we will probably not be able to solve it from any kind of modern understanding.
Maybe sometime. Carl Sabatino with Roland Smith. This is America Weekend on the Envision Radio Network.
Now, Cheap Psych Tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here looking for a way to save time and increase productivity. Well, forget your wristwatch and check out your body clock instead. Here's the biological science of it. Everybody has a body clock, technically referred to as the suprachiasmatic nucleus. It takes care of you all through the day and that it puts you to sleep at night. Work with it and productivity increases. Planning a meeting? Mornings are best. At this time of day, people are wired to help each other out. Proofreading a contract? Save it for the afternoon when your body clock prefers to work alone. What's the cheap psychological trick? Work with your body clock instead of against it, and you'll find that life becomes just a little bit easier, productivity increased, and time saved. Got a question? Contact me at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.
Order in the court.
This is attorney Jay Coleman with The Final Verdict. During their divorce, Sally told Bill she was going to take him for everything he's got and more. She intends on having Bill pay 100% of her attorney's fees. But can you include attorney's fees as part of a divorce settlement? The Final Verdict after this.
Don't try to fight the IRS on your own. Use Coast One Financial Group and let them help you get a fresh start. Dial 877-219-8780. That's 877-219-8780.
Order in the court.
Technically, no. In a divorce, there is no way to make the other side pay attorney's fees unless it's ordered to do so by the court. And that would only be a non-working housewife who petitioned the court for her attorney's fees. And that's the final verdict.